the brightest thing of light I've ever seen. My stuff, the fruitcake, it's time we hang some tinsel on that evergreen bough. For I've grown a little leaner, grown a little colder, grown a little sadder, grown a little older, and I need a little angel sitting on my shoulder. We need a little Christmas, right this very minute. Candles in the window, carols at the spinning. Yes, we need a little Christmas, right this very minute. We need a little Christmas. Bum, 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 bum. This very minute, we need a little Christmas.
Welcome, everybody, to night two of my three-night Christmas memories extravaganza of old-time radio. Those of you who have been listening to my shows for many years know that I do have two versions of that song that just played. Thank you, God, that I played the right one. And you guys know what I mean. Anyhow, I'm so glad that you are joining me tonight, whether you're in the chat room or you're listening in other places. That's fine. Grab a cup of eggnog, glass of wine, a hot toddy, whatever you enjoy. This is a family program, so it is safe for children to listen to this. I just wanted to let you know. I know it's a little bit late, especially on the East Coast, but it is a weekend and kids are out for Christmas holiday now, so it should work out. I want to thank everybody that has listened to last night's Christmas Memory Show. We're coming up on 10,000 downloads. Whew. Well, less than 10,000, but we're getting there, and that's amazing. So thank you very much for your support. It really makes it all worthwhile putting these shows together. Believe me, it's many, many hours and days of a lot of time goes into doing it, but I love doing it, and I'm glad you enjoy it too. We're going to start off tonight. Last night we heard It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed. Tonight we're going to start off with a couple of more people you might recognize, and this is a live recorded play on radio, old-time radio. This particular one, I believe, was done in 1946. Yeah, it was 1946. And it is starring Ronald Reagan and Jane Wyman. What do you think of that? We got a couple of big names right here. Enjoy.
Esther presents the Screen Guild Players. The Lady Esther Screen Guild play tonight, Christmas in Connecticut. The starring players.
This is Jane Wyman.
This is Ronald Reagan.
And this is Leon Belasco.
Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players in Warner Brothers' delightful comedy, Christmas in Connecticut. And our broadcast is dedicated to the 20th anniversary of Hawking Pictures, which is now being celebrated throughout the world. Our play stars Ronald Reagan as Jefferson Jones, Jane Wyman as Elizabeth Lane, and Leon Belasco as Felix. The Lady Esther Screen Guild Players in Christmas in Connecticut.
Have you seen Smart Housekeeping Magazine this month? Such a wonderful article by Elizabeth Lane.
That's the only way to raise a kid. Out in the country on a little farm, the kind that Elizabeth Lane writes about.
To have a horse and cow like Elizabeth Lane. Oh, doesn't she make that farm sound heavenly?
Gosh, those recipes by Elizabeth Lane. Boy, that's the kind of woman I'd like to know.
Boy, that's the kind of woman I'd like to marry.
Now, suppose that you were Elizabeth Lane, and suppose your writing was all a fraud. Recipes? You didn't even know how to boil water. And all the rest was fiction, too. You had no farm, no husband, no baby. You and your editor had just made them up. Well, now perhaps you'll know how I felt that day before Christmas when my editor dropped that bomb in my lap.
Look, Liz, I suppose you know about Yardley.
He's our publisher, your boss, and mine. He's the one who signs our checks. Anything else I ought to know?
Well, he happens to be a stickler for the truth. If he finds out that we've been dreaming up all that junk you write, he'll fire us both.
Well, why should he find out?
Listen, some fool nurse at the sailor's hospital wrote to Yardley and asked him to have a wounded sailor out at your farm
for Christmas. I think that's very nice. My farm? I haven't got a farm. I haven't even got a window box.
You're telling me.
Oh, Judd, what do we do? This is awful.
You're conservative. It's even worse.
Worse?
Yes. Yardley likes the idea so much, he figures he'd like to go along, too.
Well, I did what I always do when I'm in trouble. I went to Felix for lunch. Felix is Hungarian, but he cooks like an angel. And I steered the whole magazine crowd to his little cafe. So, naturally, he treated me like teacher's pet. And as usual, he was at the door to meet me.
Hello, Liska. Hello, darling. It's good to see you.
Hello, Felix.
He's waiting for you inside, your friend. You know, that's the one I don't like so much.
John Sloan? I didn't know he was coming into town today.
Well, you have a nice lunch, and then I think up a new recipe for you to write, yes?
Oh, don't bother, Felix. I may not need it.
What's the matter? Something wrong?
Oh, no. Just a catastrophe, that's all.
Catastrophe? Is that good?
It's horrible.
Well, you feel better when you go and eat. Go in, Liska. I'll fix you something very special.
That's about the whole story, John. We, who are about to be fired, salute you.
I wish I could feel badly about it, Elizabeth. Not that I don't sympathize, but, well, this morning on my way in from the farm, I was thinking that you and I...
Here we are. Look, Liska, I select the hors d'oeuvre myself.
Thank you, Felix.
First, some nice marinated herring and cream.
You know, Elizabeth, sometimes these things happen for the best.
Bologna?
After all, there's a better job waiting for you, if you want it. The job of being Mrs. John Sloan.
Horseradish?
I know you're not sure. I know, but I'm willing to chance that. I'm certain you'll care for me in time.
Nuts.
Now, look here, Felix.
Walnuts is pickled. Is excellent. Now I go and bring the rest.
Dear Felix, isn't he amusing?
Elizabeth, you haven't answered me.
Oh, I'm not sure, John.
I am. You'll need someone to look after you. And you love the farm. I know from the way you write about it. What do you say?
Well, my career's gone, and I guess I'll have to get married sometime, so... Oh, I mean...
Elizabeth, darling.
Excuse me, isn't this necking a little public?
Hello, Dud. I just told John I'd marry him.
We'll live on my farm. Isn't it wonderful?
Well, there are two ways of... Farm? Well, that's right. You have got a farm. In Connecticut.
Now, Dud, if you've got any idea...
But, Liz, it means my job, and it's such a cinch, too. If you're married tomorrow, Yardley can go. He can send his sailor. You'll have a husband, a farm...
And what about a baby?
Oh, I think I can help you there.
Why, John!
After all, I'm an architect, you know. When I planned the house, I thought of everything, including a nursery. And as it happens, there's a baby, too.
Don't tell me prefabricated.
No, it belongs to a neighbor who's doing war work. She leaves the infant with my housekeeper.
Say, husband, farm, and baby? Why, it's perfect.
Not by a long shot. I still can't cook.
Well, maybe you can, but Felix can.
Felix?
Don't you see, Liz? You just take him along.
Oh, there was no stopping Dud when he went into high. The next thing I knew, it was Christmas morning, and I was up at the farm, standing in the living room before the local judge.
Now, this is the sort of thing I like. A simple wedding, lovely and dignified, and short enough to get me home for Christmas dinner.
But just so we're quiet and don't wake the baby.
Oh, well, we'll do the best we... Baby!
You'll have to hurry, Judge. We haven't much time.
Apparently!
Is
dearly beloved, we are gathered in the side of...
Feliska, look, already it comes company.
The slave from the village must have brought someone.
John, it's the sailor. He's here already.
2 hours early.
Oh, well, I'll go. You take the judge in the other room.
Oh. Well, just a minute.
Hello.
Hello. I'm Jefferson Jones from the Sailor's Hospital.
Well, Merry Christmas, Mr. Jones. Won't you come in?
Thanks. Your mother invited me, Elizabeth Lane.
Oh, well, I'm Elizabeth Lane. It's my pen name. But really, in real life, I'm Mrs. Sloan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I sort of expected... I mean,
Liska, why don't you ask him he should put down that placard?
Oh, of course. So stupid of me. Mr. Jones, this is my Uncle Felix.
How'd you do?
Liska, this one I like. You see, he brings a big present.
It's sort of a rocking chair.
Well, what do you know? A rocking chair. Isn't that lovely?
Wonderful, Liska. Just what you need.
Here, I'll take the paper off. I read in your column where you couldn't find one. I hope you like it.
Oh, I'm sure I will. Well, wait, let me try it.
If you'll excuse me, ma'am, you're doing it wrong.
Wrong?
Yes, ma'am. My old man was an expert with a rocker. Solved all his problems that way. But he said you had to know how to rock.
Well, don't you just rock?
Oh, no. If you'd like me to show you.
Oh, why not, Liska? Let him sit down.
Thanks. Now, suppose you're tired and worried over a problem. Well, then you rock like this. Sort of slow and calm. Like you're on a ship on the open sea. And then you get to thinking slow and calm. Get it? That's the ocean rock.
Uncle Felix, isn't that wonderful?
Wonderful.
And then there's that horseback rock. When you can't sit still, feel jittery, got to be doing something. And then there's the lazy rock. When you want something across the room and you're too lazy to get up and get it. See?
Well, really. I never knew there was so much to a rocking chair. Mr. Jones, I...
Liska, what is that?
Well, the baby, of course. The
baby so quick?
Well, he must have awakened early.
Well, after all, it's 11 o'clock. I guess we both know what that means, ma'am.
Do we?
Sure. I read your schedule in the magazine. 11 o'clock, time for a bath.
Oh, yes, a bath.
Say, Mrs. Lane, do you mind if I watch?
Watch?
Oh, sure, those little fellas are awfully cute in the tub. Say, it's not good to let them cry too hard either.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, come along. I think we'd better get him up.
This I like, those two together. I like this really much.
Felix, where's Elizabeth?
Oh, she goes to wash the baby and Mr. Jones. I mean, he goes too.
Well, I must say, this is very irregular. What am I going to tell the judge?
Oh, I take care of the judge. I make him nice martini. Maybe I make him two martini.
Hey, sure got a pretty good pair of lungs.
From my husband's side of the family.
Doesn't look like you at all. I guess he looks like your husband, huh?
Oh, no. More like Mr. Sloan's aunt. Well, you see, Mr. Sloan's aunt is...
I can just about guess. Well, he'll stop crying once he's in his bath. Come on, we'd better get started.
Well, maybe I shouldn't bathe him today. It's rather cold.
But you always bathe him every day. Isn't that what you wrote in the magazine?
Is it? I mean, it is, of course.
Now, let me fill the bassinet for you.
Thanks.
You see, he likes it. Gosh, you don't know what this means to me, Mrs. Sloan, to watch an expert like you give the baby a bath.
Oh, yes. Well, we might as well put him in.
With his diapers on?
Oh, no, of course not. I meant to...
Oh, wait a minute. I'll test the water. Yep, just right.
Oh, my, you seem to know a lot about bathing babies, Mr. Jones.
Oh, I used to bathe a neighbor's kid.
You did?
Helped me work my way through night school.
Well, how would you like to bathe this baby?
You mean you'd let me?
Oh, yes, of course. It's a relief to have someone else do it for a change. You know how it is, bathing him every day, week after week. It gets sort of monotonous.
Hey, this is going to be fun. Come on, Skipper. Off you come. See there? He likes his Uncle Jeff.
Oh, I'm sure he does. He couldn't help it.
All right. Here we go now. Off with your shirt. That's it. And now the rest. Say, Mrs. Sloan, you never told me his name.
His name? Oh, we call him Robert.
Oh, that's nice. And now we're all ready for... Robert?
Oh, a short for Roberta.
Oh, I guess you were hoping for a boy, huh?
I certainly was.
Come on now, princess. In you go. Atta girl.
You know, the way you handle her, Mr. Jones, really, you'd make a wonderful father. You're not married, of course, by any chance?
No, I guess the cards are stacked against me. Every time I meet a girl I like, it turns out she's already married.
Oh.
I couldn't hear you. What'd you say?
Oh, nothing, just... Oh.
Elizabeth.
Oh, yes, John. Oh, Mr. Jones, that's my husband. Would you mind finishing up while I...
Oh, not at all. It's a pleasure. Go right ahead.
Oh, thanks. You don't know what this means to me.
Elizabeth, what were you doing in there?
Just bathing the baby.
At a time like this?
Well, I thought she should look her best for the wedding.
There isn't going to be any wedding.
There isn't?
Not this morning, at any rate.
Oh, but what about the judge?
Mr. Felix took care of him, all right. His Honor, the judge, just staggered home.
The second act of the Lady Esther Screen Guild play will follow in a moment. Now, a word from Lady Esther.
I'm going to make a statement now which will probably shock every woman who is listening. Some of America's outstanding skin specialists have told me this, and here it is. Rubbing the skin of your face can make it look older, faster than it should. And here is the reason why, they tell me, and I agree. Because the skin of your face is fragile, the most delicate skin of your entire body. Rubbing can stretch and break down the delicate underskin structure, can make even a firm skin flabbier and older looking than your age. But with Lady Esther four-purpose face cream, there's no need for harmful rubbing. This famous cream is so soft, you just smooth it on gently, then wipe it off. That's all. It dissolves as it touches your skin, needs no help from your fingers. That's why you'll love the feel and the look of your skin after even one application of Lady Esther Face Cream. Without rubbing, Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream cleans your skin, softens your skin, and helps nature refine the pores. And it also leaves a perfect base on which your powder clings longer and looks lovelier. Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream asks no help from any other cream. You see, Lady Esther Face Cream contains one of the most beautifying ingredients known to modern science. This acts as an extra safeguard to help keep your skin soft, smooth, and young-looking. If you will try it, I'm very sure you'll want to use Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream always.
Lady Esther presents the second act of Christmas in Connecticut, starring Jane Wyman, Leon Belasco, and Ronald Reagan.
Well, the judge was gone, and the wedding was put off. But it's funny. I couldn't make myself feel sorry. I guess Mr. Jones was to blame for that. He was tall and attractive, sort of like that movie actor Ronald Reagan. The way he looked at me, I couldn't help but wonder. But I shook myself and told myself not to be a fool. And then when I'd settled down again, I forced myself to listen to John.
What worries me, Elizabeth, Mr. Yardley might arrive at any moment. And you know what that would mean, of course.
One more for breakfast.
Elizabeth, he's your boss, your publisher. If he finds out you made up all those things you wrote, but you aren't even married.
I know. And I don't care so much for myself. It's Dud Beecham. I wouldn't want him to lose his job. What'll we do, John?
Well, I talked to Judge Crothers on the phone. He's willing to come back tonight.
Tonight?
When all the others are asleep. Even if Mr. Yardley has already arrived, we can be married, and he'll never know the difference.
Well, maybe he won't. Well, all right, John, if you think...
Liska, you will never guess.
Guess what, Felix?
Oh, just now I'm in the village, and somebody asked me who I am, and I say I'm your Uncle Felix.
My dear chap, why get so excited about it?
Excited? Who gets
Felix,
excited?
Felix, please, what's it all about?
Liska, when they find out who you are, the famous Elizabeth Lane, and you come to live here, and there is a sailor here too, a hero. Well, they say you must come and be their guest tonight.
Well, where? At what?
At the Christmas party. Very formal. At the firehouse.
The firehouse?
Yeah, they say that you can come along too.
Of all the unadulterated meddling
now,
fools.
Now, Felix, you didn't say we'd be there.
What else can I say? They are your neighbors.
Suppose that Mr. Yardley arrives.
Maybe he likes a little party, too.
Oh, but John let his housekeeper go for Christmas. Who'll stay with the baby till her mother comes for?
Don't worry. I find somebody to stay.
Who?
Who can I find in a place like this? Me?
Hey, you're quite a dancer, Mr. Jones.
Oh, I get around.
I guess I should have gone into more training. I feel so funny, all sort of dizzy.
Hey, we'd better get you outside. A little fresh air. Come on. You'll feel better in no time at all.
Oh, I'm sure I will. It's lovely out here, isn't it? The moon and the snow.
Sure is beautiful. I hate to think I'll be leaving tomorrow.
Oh? So soon?
I'm due back tomorrow night. But I'll never forget how nice you've been to me.
Oh, I'm glad. Let's walk.
In those shoes?
Oh, that's right. They are sort of inadequate. I guess I was just kind of...
Hey, wait. I got a better idea. How about this sleigh?
Oh, we couldn't.
Why not? It's just parked here. We'll just imagine we're riding.
You know, it might be fun.
Up you go now. There we are.
Gee, this is wonderful. Fur robes and everything. Where'll we go?
For a magic ride to the land of every man.
And every woman?
Hey, that horse is moving. He wasn't tied up.
That's right, he wasn't. You want to get out?
Not me. You want to get out?
Not me. You know, speaking of marriage...
Were we?
Well, I guess I was just talking out loud. I kind of got marriage on my mind these days.
Me too.
Really? Any special girl?
Well, I'd say she's extra special.
Oh, she lives in New York?
Not exactly. You might say the country.
On a farm?
Well, yes.
Jefferson Jones, are you flirting with me?
Listen, we'd better go back. Look, Mrs. Sloan, your husband might not like this.
Oh, he wouldn't know. He's left.
Left?
Well, he had to see Judge Crothers, a little personal matter.
Oh.
And moments like these don't come very often. I mean, everything's so calm and still, and the whole world asleep. All I want to say is, let it sleep.
Yeah, me too. I say, let it sleep.
You there. You, sir. Stop that confounded snoring. Wake up. I, sir, am Alexander Yardley. Who are you?
Me? Oh. Oh, I am Uncle Felix, the nursemaid.
Where's Mrs. Lane? Mrs. Sloan? Mr. Sloan? That sailor? Where's everybody?
They all go to Christmas party in the village. Liska, I mean Elizabeth, she is guest of honor.
Oh, they know her, do they? Well, I shouldn't wonder. The best magazine feature in America. So, this is the place I've read so much about. This is her farm, eh?
This is the place you've read so much about.
Tell me, what about the baby?
What should I tell you? Don't you know about babies?
My good man, this is no ordinary baby. This is Elizabeth Lane's baby, the smart housekeeping baby. Tell me, could I see the little shaver? Just a quick look. I promise I won't disturb him a bit.
Oh, all right. He's in this room. You can see from here.
I bet that he looks just like... He's gone! He's not there.
No, there.
You idiot! He's been kidnapped while you were snoring.
But
why any thief could have entered this house? I came in myself. Don't stand there, you fool. Where's the telephone?
Oh, you.
Now, Mr. Sloan, let me get this straight. You left the party to take care of a little business matter. When you returned, your wife was gone?
Yes, Mr. Yardley. One of the villagers said she'd ridden off in a sleigh with Mr. Jones.
Sailor. The man to whom we opened our hands, our hearts, our home.
His home.
His home. Be quiet, you! Mr. Sloan, have you any idea who might have kidnapped your baby?
Well, no, I wouldn't know who'd kidnap him.
And where can your wife have been all this time?
I wouldn't know that either. I mean,
Wait. Here she comes now.
Felix, why are all the lights on? Oh, Mr. Yardley.
Yes, Mrs. Sloan, and I must say it's time you returned from your gallivanting.
I wasn't gallivanting.
No, she just took me for a sleigh ride.
You, sir, I'll deal with you later. Mrs. Sloan, do you realize your baby has been kidnapped?
Kidnapped?
Taken from its warm little bed. Taken from this home.
Oh, that. Well, really, there's no need to get excited.
What? Of all the heartless, callous statements.
Now, please, Mr. Yardley. You'll have a stroke.
You dare to stand there and talk that way about the smart housekeeping baby? Do you realize what it's done for my circulation?
No, but I know what it's done for mine.
Now, Elizabeth, please.
Don't please me, John. I've had enough of being told what to do. I'll do the talking for a while. Mr. Yardley, you may as well know the truth. John and I were never married.
What?
But we really meant to, sir. It was...
We just never got around to it.
You mean the smart housekeeping baby is...
No.
No. That's what I've been trying to tell you. There isn't any baby. Anyway, not mine. No baby, no husband, no farm, no nothing. I made it all up.
Made it all up? Why, I'll be the laughing stock of the country, of the world, of the universe. Young lady, you're fired.
Well, okay, but you owe me 2 weeks' pay. And now, if it's all the same to you, I'm going to my room. I don't wish to talk anymore.
Hey, wait a minute.
To anyone.
Oh, yeah? You mean to anyone but me. Come on, we're going to have a little conference alone. So that's the whole story, huh? On the level?
On the level.
And you're really not married?
I'm as free as a bird.
That's what you think. Come here.
Liska, darling.
Oh, Felix, go away.
But this is important, Liska. From Mr. Yardley.
Oh, all right, come in.
Liska, Mr. Yardley asked me I should come and talk to you.
About what?
Well, just now comes a telegram from another magazine, American Housekeeping. They asked you to take a job. Double the salary.
They did?
Yeah. But when Mr. Yardley finds this out, oh, he begs you to stay with him. Also, double the salary.
Well, how did he find out?
Well, he happened to see me open the telegram.
You mean you opened Liska's telegram?
Not only I open it, I send it.
Thank you, Jane Wyman and Ronald Reagan, for your excellent portrayals of Elizabeth and Jeff in Warner Brothers' Christmas in Connecticut. Say, incidentally, Ronnie, I understand that this is the 20th anniversary of Talking Pictures.
Yes, Truman, 20 years ago, the silent shadows of the screen found a voice.
To say the screen found a voice is rather an understatement, I'd say.
Well, you're right, Jane. It certainly wasn't as casual as that. The four Warner brothers, Harry, Sam, Jack, and Albert, laid their last dollar on the line to make it possible. And with it went years of experimentation and heartbreak. The road which led to the perfection of sound pictures was a long and hard one. And speaking for all of us in the industry, I think it's entirely fitting to pause for a moment and pay tribute to the men who made modern motion pictures possible.
Thank you again, Jane, Ronnie, and Leon, for appearing with us tonight.
Prospero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y felicidad.
You to an interesting discussion between Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, but Molly, look, we don't know it's a Christmas present.
Just the same, McGee, we're not going to open it before Christmas.
Oh, but sweetheart, there's nothing on it that says don't open till Christmas.
Don't get mushy with me. I still say we don't open it till Christmas morning.
Okay, okay, okay. I just wondered if it could have been them silver fox furs, that's all. I just wondered.
What silver fox furs?
Oh, never mind. We'll know Christmas morning. Well, I guess I'll run out the cigar store.
McGee!
Huh?
What silver fox furs? Who's sending me some furs?
How should I know?
Well, you're the most exasperate. But this is exactly the size and shape of a box that would have a set of fox furs in it.
Hey, cut that out. You can't open that. Not till Christmas.
But, darling...
Don't get mushy with me. You can't open it. Here, give me that package. You wouldn't let me open it, and I won't let you open it.
Why do you pay any attention to me? I'm just a woman. I don't know anything. You're the man of the house, and what you say ought to go, dearie.
Hand me the scissors.
Here.
Thanks. Uh-oh. Bad news, Molly. It ain't hers.
What? It isn't? Mm. Oh, dear. I told you we shouldn't have opened that package, McGee. Not until Christmas. Uh-huh. But what is it?
I don't know. Look.
Oh. It's a musical instrument of some kind. Looks like a little pipe organ.
There's electric wires on. Hey, I know. It's one of them chime doorbells. And a beauty, too.
You mean one of those doorbells that every time it rings, you expect somebody to say, the following announcement is transcribed?
Yeah, but it don't say here who sent it. Now, who do you suppose...
Oh, get that stuff out of sight quick, McGee.
Okay, okay.
Come in. Mr. Wilcox.
Hello, Paul.
Oh, hi, Harlow. Come on in.
No, thanks. I just wanted to leave these packages for you. And don't open them before Christmas.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Wilcox, and we won't. But what's your hurry?
I've got to stop and get a sandwich before I go back to the office. I missed my lunch. Well, Merry Christmas.
Well, heavenly days. Now, there's plenty of cold chicken in the refrigerator, Mr. Wilcox, and a lemon meringue pie.
Oh, boy, my favorite vegetable. But, gee, I hate to be any trouble, Molly.
It's no trouble at all. It's no trouble at all. I'll just set out the chicken.
Now, wait a minute. No, you don't. I'll find everything myself. Don't get up or I won't stay.
Oh, well, go ahead, Wilcox, and easy on that pie. You got to watch them hips.
Okay, I'll try to restrain myself.
Well, we know he didn't send that doorbell.
Oh, but I wonder who did. Oh, dear. Come in. Yeah. Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Uppington?
How do you do, Mrs. McGee? Hello, Mrs. McGee.
Hello, yippee-yoo, tie to you, Mrs. Young. Won't you slip out of your stables and squat a spell?
Thank you, no, Mrs. McGee. I came over to ask a favor of yours.
Oh, certainly, Abigail. Anything we can do, just ask it.
Oh, yes. Unless you want me to take that pooch of yours for a walk. I draw the line at patrolling the precinct with that pie-eyed peak.
Miss McGee, Phoebe does not enter into this matter at all. Besides, I believe she entertains the same aversion to you that you do to her.
Well, that's a lot of entertainment for one man and a dog. But what can we do for you, Abigail, dear?
Well, Mrs. McGee, I head the neighborhood committee to conserve waste paper for the government. I wish to ask you not to burn or destroy your waste paper and cardboard. Please save it, and I shall have a truck pick it up whenever you call.
Why, sure. I'd be glad to help such a good cause. Personally, I'd like to form a movie committee for this war.
A movie committee, Miss McGee?
Yeah, I'd like to get the government to make a documentary picture and send 1 million prints to Tokyo.
Starring what actor, dearie?
Harry Carey. By the way, Uppy, did you by any chance send us an electric chime doorbell for Christmas?
No, I did not, Miss McGee. But I must say I admire your blunt way of inquiring. I simply detest people who hint.
I do too, Uppy. Although when I was a cub reporter years ago, I was always the diplomat.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you betcha. Seriously, never used to ask a direct question if I could help it. But if there was any inside dope I wanted, I got it. Get that dope McGee, I was known after that day.
Oh, my.
Get that dope McGee, the dashing, daring darling of the dailies and the ding-dong dipsy-doodle-daddy of the dirt dishers, diligently deviling dignified diplomats for delicate details, discreetly dictating data difficult to decipher and deliberately denouncing dangerous demagogues dripping with dubious dialogue designed to develop defeatism, doing my duty with a dearth of dilly-dallying despite the dirty digs of the desperate dog to determine to dampen my do-or-die disposition and deteriorate a diggity-dynamo into a drippy-droop, a dandy detective, a dodging death and danger, but doesn't this description sound like a total stranger?
Every who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot.
But the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not. The Grinch hated Christmas, the whole Christmas season.
Oh, please don't ask why. No one quite knows the reason. It could be, perhaps, that his shoes were too tight. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. But I think that the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. But whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood there on Christmas Eve, hating the Whos. Staring down from his cave with a sour, grinchy frown at the warm, lighted windows below in their town. For he knew every Who down in Whoville beneath was busy now, hanging a holly Who wreath.
Trim up the tree with Christmas stuff, a jingle balls and hoopoo stuff. Trim up the town with goo-hoo guns and fizzle things and wands.
Trim every blessed window and trim every blessed door. Hang up hoo-boo-hoo fix,
then run out and get some more.
Hang Santukas on the ceiling, pile Santunas on the floor.
Trim every blessed needle on the blessed Christmas tree. Christmas comes tomorrow.
Trim you. Trim me, trim up your pets with fuzzle fuzz, and zipper bloops, and fuzzle buzz. Trim up your uncle and your aunt with yards of poop on plans.
Trim every house in Whoville from the cellar to the roof. Hang up a mile of dazzlers,
and 3 miles of dazzlers too.
Hang dang donglers on the bathtub, trim the occupant with blue.
To every home in
and they're hanging their stockings, he snarled with a sneer. Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here. Then he growled with his Grinch fingers, nervously drumming. I must find some way to keep Christmas from coming. Or tomorrow, I know, all those Who girls and boys will wake bright and early. They'll rush for their toys and then, oh, the noise, oh, the noise, 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 noise. There's one thing I hate, all the noise, 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 noise. And their shrieks, squeaks, and squeals racing round on their wheels. They'll dance with jing-tinglers tied onto their heels. They'll blow their flu-flubers, they'll bang their tartinkers. They'll blow their hoo-hoobers, they'll bang their gar-skinkers. They'll beat their trum-tookers, they'll slam their flu-slonkers. They'll beat their blum-blookers, they'll wham their hoo-wonkers. And they play noisy games like Zuzita Kaze, a roller skate type of lacrosse and croquet. And then they'll make ear-splitting noises to looks on their great big electro-hoo-cardio schnooks. Then the Who's, young and old, will sit down to a feast. And they'll feast, and they'll feast. And they'll feast, 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 feast. They'll feast on Who pudding and rare Who roast beast. Raw roast beast is a feast I can't stand in the least. And then they'll do something I hate most of all. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, will stand close together with Christmas bells ringing. They'll stand hand in hand, and those Who's will start singing.
welcome Christmas Day.
They'll sing and they'll sing and they'll sing, 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 sing.
And the more the Grinch thought of this whole Christmas sing, the more the Grinch thought,
I must stop this whole thing. But for 53 years I put up with it now. I must stop Christmas from coming. But how?
Then he got an idea. An awful idea. The Grinch got a wonderful, awful idea.
I know just what to do. The Grinch laughed in his throat. I'll make a quick Santa Claus hat and a coat.
He chuckled and clucked.
What a great Grinchy trick. With this coat and this hat, I'll look just like Saint Nick. All I need is a reindeer.
The Grinch looked around, but since reindeer are scarce, there was none to be found. Did that stop the Grinch?
Ha!
The Grinch simply said,
if I can't find a reindeer, I'll make one instead.
So he took his dog Max, and he took some black thread, and he tied a big horn on the top of his head. Then he loaded some bags and some old empty sacks on a ramshackle sleigh, and he whistled for Max. Then the Grinch said,
get up!
And the sleigh started down toward the homes where the Whos lay a-snoozing their town. Windows were dark. No one knew he was there. All the Whos were all dreaming sweet dreams without care. When he came to the first little house on the square.
This is stop number one.
The old Grinchy Claus hissed as he climbed to the roof, empty bags in his fist. Then he slid down the chimney, a rather tight pinch, but if Santa could do it then, so could the Grinch. He got stuck only once, for a minute or two. Then he stuck his head out of the fireplace flue where the little Who stockings hung all in a row.
These stockings, he grinched, are the first things to go.
And slunk with a smile most unpleasant around the whole room, and he took every present. Popguns, pamponas, pantookas and drums, checkerboards, bisselbinks, popcorn and plums. Then he stuffed them in bags. Then the Grinch very nimbly stuffed all the bags one by one up the chimbley.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel. You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch. You have termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch. Given the choice between the two of you, I'd take the seasick crocodile.
Then he slunk to the icebox. He took the Who's feast. He took the Who pudding. He took the roast beast. He cleaned out the icebox as quick as a flash. Why, that Grinch even took the last can of Who hash. Then he stuffed all the food up the chimney with glee. And now, grinned the Grinch, I will stuff up the tree. As the Grinch took the tree, as he started to shove, he heard a small sound like the coo of a dove. He turned around fast and he saw a small Who, little Cindy Lou Who, who was no more than two. She stared at the Grinch and said, Sandy Claus, why? Why are you taking our Christmas tree? Why? But you know, that old Grinch was so smart and so slick, he thought up a lie and he thought it up quick.
Why, my sweet little tot,
the fake Santa Claus lied.
There's a light on this tree that won't light on one side. So I'm taking it home to my workshop, my dear. I'll fix it up there, then I'll bring it back here.
And his fib fooled the child. Then he patted her head and he got her a drink and he sent her to bed. And when Cindy Lou Who was in bed with her cup, he crept to the chimney and stuffed the tree up. Then he went up the chimney himself, the old liar, and the last thing he took was the log for their fire. On their walls he left nothing but hooks and some wire. And the one speck of food that he left in the house was a crumb that was even too small for a mouse. Then he did the same thing to the other Who's houses, leaving crumbs much too small for the other Who's mouses.
You're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a nasty, wasty skunk. Your heart is full of unwashed socks. Your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Grinch. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk. You're a rotter, Mr. Grinch. You're the king of sinful socks. Your heart's a dead tomato splotched with moldy purple spots, Mr. Grinch. Your soul is an appalling dump heap, overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of deplorable rubbish imaginable, mangled up in tangled up knots. You nauseate me, Mr. Grinch, with a nauseous super nos. You're a crooked, jerky jockey, and you drive a crooked horse, Mr. Grinch. You're a three-decker sauerkraut and toadstool sandwich with arsenic sauce.
It was a quarter of dawn, all the Who's still abed, all the Who's still a snooze, when he packed up his sled, packed it up with their presents, their ribbons, their wrappings, their snoof and their fuzzles, their tringlers and trappings. 10,000 feet up, up the side of Mount Crumpet, he rode with his load to the tip-top to dump. He was grinchily humming.
They're finding out now that no Christmas is coming. They're just waking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouths will hang open a minute or two. Then the Who's down in Whoville will all cry, boo-hoo. That's a noise, grinned the Grinch, that I simply must hear.
He paused, and the Grinch put a hand to his ear. And he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low, then it started to grow. This sound wasn't sad. Why, this sound sounded glad. Every who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing. Without any presents at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch with his Grinch feet, ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling.
How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags.
He puzzled and puzzled till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before.
Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more.
And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say, that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And then the true meaning of Christmas came through, and the Grinch found the strength of 10 Grinches. Plus 2. And now that his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light. With a smile in his soul, he descended Mount Comfort, cheerily blowing ho ho on his trumpet. He rode into Whoville, he brought back their toys, he brought back their floof to the Who girls and boys. He brought back their snoop and their tringlers and fuzzles, brought back their pantookas, their dafflers and wuzzles. He brought everything back, all the food for the feast. And he himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beast. Welcome, Christmas. Bring your cheer. Cheer to all who's far and near. Christmas Day is in our grasp, so long as we have hands to clasp. Christmas Day will always be just as long as we have breathed. Welcome, Christmas, while we stand heart to heart and hand in hand.
On a choir, it's going home and getting warm by the fire. It's true wherever you go. finds love, it feels like Christmas.
A cup of kindness that we share with another, a sweet reunion with a friend or a brother.
In all the places you find love, it feels like Christmas.
It is the season of the heart, a special time of caring. The ways of love make clear.
It is the season of the spirit. The best is here, we hear it, is make it last all year.
It's in the giving of a gift to another, a pair of mittens that were made by your mother.
It's all the ways that we show love that feel like Christmas.
Upon a childhood we'll always remember, it is the summer of the soul in December.
Yes, when you do your best for love, it feels like Christmas.
It is the season of the heart, a special time of caring. The ways of love make clear.
The season of the spirit, the message if we hear it, is make it last all year.
It's in the singing of a street corner choir, it's going home and getting warm by the fire. It's true wherever you find love, it feels like Christmas. It's true wherever you find love, it feels like Christmas. It feels like Christmas. It feels like Christmas.
Oh, gosh, that caught me unaware. I was having fun chatting in the chat room. For everybody that got kicked out of the chat room all at once, there were like 15 people disappeared. Must have been a glitch, but I see people coming back now, so I'm happy because I got lonesome. There were only five of us left and, you know, safety in numbers and all that. Okay, I'm going to move on with another play, and this is another holiday favorite that I know everybody loves a lot, and excuse me, I'm losing my voice. It is going to be, you know, this is really weird. I'm having trouble with my switchboard, too. No, not on Christmas. Okay, so the one that we're going to hear now is also starring some pretty famous people. It is starring Bing Crosby and Dinah Shore. And the play is Holiday Inn, another favorite of mine.
The Screen Guild play tonight,
Holiday Inn.
The starring players,
this is Bing Crosby.
And this is Dinah Shore.
Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild players in musical highlights from Paramount Pictures' tuneful film, Holiday Inn, starring Bing Crosby as Jim Hardy and Dinah Shore as Linda Mason. This is the story of Jim Hardy, a man with an idea.
Oh, pardon me, Brother Bradley. A man with three ideas.
Three?
Yep. First one came to me when Lila Dixon and Ted Hanover and myself, we were doing a song and dance act in a New York nightclub.
Uh-huh.
I had an idea that I would marry Lila, quit show business, and settle down on a farm in Connecticut.
Well, sounds great. How'd the idea work out?
Didn't work. Just when I felt sorry for Ted because Lila was marrying me and we'd leave him looking for two new partners, Ted gave Lila a quick fireside chat.
Mm-hmm.
He sold her on staying in the act with him, and when I walked out to go to the farm, I walked out alone. I've had better ideas, I think.
Well, tell me, Jim, what was the next idea?
Holiday Inn. See, it didn't take me too long to learn that a farm was no place for a lazy boy. So I decided to change the farmhouse into a roadside nightclub, open on holidays only, and featuring shows built around each particular holiday. I even had a show planned for Hitler's funeral.
Huh?
Yeah.
What made you think Hitler would be buried on a holiday?
Oh, brother, any day he's buried will be a holiday. I wrote special songs for all the holidays, and then I began looking for some talent.
I see.
I was planning to open on Christmas Eve, but the game was called off on account of no one showing up. Not even performers. Boy, I was really feeling sorry for myself on Christmas Day, and then Santa Claus brought me Linda Mason. And when I saw Linda, well, I began to get another idea. See, I can still remember the first day when she came up to the farm and she asked me for a job.
Could you use me in your show, Mr. Hardy?
Well, I don't know. Might find a spot for you somewhere. What can you do?
Oh, I dance a little and sing.
Gee, I couldn't guarantee any salary at first. Right now, I've got the ledger in an iron lung.
Oh, I don't care if you pay me off in eggs.
Pay off in eggs? Lady, you've either got me mixed up with Bob Hope or some millionaire.
Please give me a chance.
Well, let's see what you can do here. Sort of gives me a chance to keep a little promise I made to myself. I swore I was going to sing this song here at the inn tonight. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen, hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a quiet Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white. Go ahead, I'll pitch you the word.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas,
just like the ones I used to know.
Just like the ones I used to know.
Where the treetops glisten.
Where the treetops glisten.
And children listen.
And children listen. To hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write,
may your days be merry and bright. You're hired.
Gee, thanks. Thanks a lot, Mr. Hardy.
I want to tell you, though, there's a string tied to it.
Oh, I was afraid it was too good to be true.
Yep. From now on, you got to start calling me Jim. Well, between this here and that there, Brother B, I want to tell you, Linda and I managed to talk enough musicians and entertainers into taking a chance with us to let us open Holiday Inn on New Year's Eve.
Mm.
Ah, the joint was packed. I was standing in the corner pounding myself on the back for having hit the jackpot when the lights went off again all over the world. Just to give everything a nice, ironic touch, Linda was singing Happy Holiday when trouble staggered in.
Happy holidays! Happy holidays!
While the merry bells keep ringing, may your every wish come true.
Happy holidays! Happy holidays!
May the calendar keep ringing, happy holidays to you.
You're burdened down with trouble, if your nerves are wearing thin, pack your load down the road and come to Holiday Inn.
If the traffic noise affects you like a squeaky violin, kick your cares down the stairs, come on to Holiday Inn.
If you can't find someone who will set your heart awhirl, take your car and motor to the home of boy meets girl.
If you're laid up with a breakdown, throw away your vitamins.
Don't get worse.
Catch a hold of your nerves and
come to Holiday Inn.
Happy holidays. Happy holidays.
May the calendar keep ringing.
Happy holidays to
Oh, I want to tell you, Brother B, that gal could really sing the socks off.
Yes, indeed. Well, no one's going to argue with you about that, Jim, but, well, if I'm not being too obtrusive, let's get back to the trouble you said staggered into Holiday Inn.
Oh, yes, the trouble. Well, it was my former partner and throat cutter, Dick Ted Hanover. Ted staggered in with a compound alcoholic fracture. This boy was loaded. There was nothing wrong with his propensity for grabbing my girls. He walked right over to Linda and began dancing with her, and just watching them dance together, I had a hunch that my days with Linda were numbered. The next morning, though, when I went into the room where I had put Ted to sort of sleep it off, I began to think I had a chance to... Good morning, Ted. Got a little head, huh?
Oh. Say, where am I?
You're in Holiday Inn.
Well, how did I get here? Who brought me?
Haven't you heard about the stork?
This is no time for your alleged comedy. Lila left me.
What?
Yeah, I got a wire from her at the theater telling me she was quitting me. Going to marry some Texas millionaire or something.
Uh-oh.
Then I had a drink.
A drink? Brother, you couldn't hit the floor with a handful of hominy.
Say, I seem to remember dancing with some girl after I got here last night.
Girl?
Yeah. I'm beginning to remember a few things. Gee, she was a perfect partner for me. Now that Lila's left me, I have to get a new partner, and that girl, she's just the girl for me.
Oh, no, Ted. I think you're much better off doing a single. You're a born soloist, you know, old boy.
Oh, no, Jim, no, sir. I've got to get that girl for a partner. Gee, if I could only remember what she looked like.
You don't remember?
No. Say, wait a minute. You saw her.
Me?
Yeah. Come on, describe her.
Oh, well, I wasn't watching very closely, you know. She was, I would say she was a medium-built sort of a girl with a medium face. She had a nice evening gown on with a sort of a Bal McCann back.
You're a great help, you are. Thanks a lot.
Oh, it's really nothing at all. Happy to do it for you.
Just the same, I got a hunch. I'm going to find that girl, and believe me, she's worth waiting for.
Well, where are you going to find her?
Right here. I have a hunch she'll be back here for the next holiday.
Well, how do you like that for a guy moving in on me, Brother B?
Well, Jim, couldn't you have told him she was your girl and asked him to keep away from her?
Oh, you can't be that naive. True, old boy. Don't you remember Lila? Ted made a habit of stealing my girls away from me. My only chance to hang on to Linda was to keep her out of Ted's sight. Until I had enough cabbage in the bank to ask her to marry me. And for the next holiday, Lincoln's birthday, I decided that Linda and I, we're going to work in blackface to keep Ted from discovering her. Well, she wasn't too happy either when I broke the idea to her about it.
Oh, Jim, I look terrible in that stuff.
No, you won't.
I don't even know how to put it on.
I'll put it on for you. I'm an old boot black, you know. Well, let's see. Here we go now.
Oh. For a month and a half, I've been dreaming about how pretty I was going to look tonight.
Well, you'll have plenty of times to be pretty. Say, you know, I was just going to ask you if you'd like to be in the rest of the shows out here.
You were?
Will you?
Will I? I just wish I didn't have to work in that florist shop all the other days in the year to make these few possible.
Well, maybe a little later on when we start doing better, we... Well, you can stay out here all the time.
Did you hear what you just said?
I just caught the last part of it then.
Was it a proposal?
Well, it sure will be when I get a few bucks in the bank.
Gosh, you're a strange duck. You don't even give me a chance to say darling and throw my arms around you.
Well, you'd better wait until you see my bank book.
Well, I guess I'm sort of engaged.
Yes, and I guess we better sort of start the show, too. Come on, we can't just sing here in the dressing room.
On a February morn, tiny baby boy was born. Abraham.
When he grew up, this tiny babe, the folks all called him honest Abe. Abraham.
He was a great man, Abraham.
Abraham.
In 1860, he became the 16th president. And now he's in the Hall of Fame, a most respected gem.
And that is why we celebrate this blessed February day. Abraham.
USA's United Thanks to one whose name was Nancy Hanks. Abraham. Abraham.
She gave this land its finest son, whoever went to Washington. Abraham.
Somebody told him General Grant was drinking every night.
He answered, go see if you can get all my generals tied.
That's why I celebrate that February day. Abraham. Abraham.
Continue in just a moment with the second half of our musical highlight from Holiday Inn. Well, Jim, that...
Huh?
That really should have eliminated Hanover, huh?
Well, I thought he'd take a fast count, but Ted promoted a couple of Hollywood talent scouts to come out to the inn. A couple of boys from Hollywood and signed Linda and himself up.
They got a picture contract,
yep,
huh?
That's what they did, in a little epic titled Holiday Inn.
Now, wait. You mean they stole your idea and made it into a picture?
Well, no. When Ted stole my girl, I gave him the idea for the picture.
And that was the end of everything, huh?
Practically. I closed up Holiday Inn after Ted and Linda left, and I just sat around feeling sorry for myself. And on Thanksgiving Day, I read in the gossip columns that they were going to be married as soon as they finished the picture. Well, then I was really ready for the river. And then Mamie, my housekeeper, she took me in hand and gave me sort of a chalk talk on chickadees and their chicaneries.
Closing up the inn and sitting around like a jellyfish. Just because a slicker stole your gal and you ain't got fight enough to get her back.
I tried to keep her here, Mamie.
What kind of keeping was that? Nothing but tricks. If you hadn't made Miss Linda mad hiring that driver to keep her away from the inn the night them Hollywood scouts was here, and then acting like she couldn't be trusted to stay with you in the face of temptation, she'd still be here. Why, right now, if you went to Hollywood and told Miss Linda how much you love her and misses her, that is, if you told her the way a lady likes to hear it, I'll bet you she'd be the quickest ex-movie star that ever ex.
Well, just what do you have in mind?
Grab yourself a handful of train and get on out to Hollywood.
Well, and then what? See, after all, I can't just walk up to a girl I'm in love with and I haven't seen her in several months and say, Dr. Livingston, I presume, or something.
Well, now, see here, Mr. Jim. I can tell you to get out to Hollywood, and I can also advise you to take Miss Linda in your arms and crush her. But after that, Mr. Jim, you got to put the pressure on yourself.
Well, did you take Mamie's advice, Jim?
Well, I had nothing to lose, Brad. I walked onto the lot where they were making the movie version of Holiday Inn. Just as they were about to shoot the last scene of the picture.
Mm.
I want to tell you, it gave me something of a start. Because that movie set looked exactly like my Connecticut farmhouse. The artificial snow coming down from above, it really took me back to that Christmas day when Linda showed up at Holiday Inn looking for a job. And then Linda began singing White Christmas, and Well, I mustered up enough nerve to walk right into the scene. When it was all over, Ted Hanover was looking for a new partner, and Linda and I were off to see a man about a license.
Thank you, Bing Crosby and Dinah Shore, for your wonderful singing of the musical highlights from Paramount Pictures' Holiday Inn. It was a real musical treat, one that we of the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will long, long remember.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that, Truman, but I know somebody who'll remember the program longer than anyone.
Really, Dinah? Friend of yours?
Well, in a way. Her name's Dinah Shore. I've always wanted to sing with Bing the King.
Well, that makes it a standoff then, Dinah, because Crosby has always wanted to sing with Dinah the Dixie Diva.
Well, we couldn't have found a better place to do it, Bing, right on this program for the benefit of the Motion Picture Relief Fund. Anything you'd like to add, sir?
Well, I was going to say something about next week's program, but I guess it can wait, Dinah.
Thank you, and good night. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Of your together. If the fates allow, until then we'll have to muddle through somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas
now. Today, we're taking you back to Christmas Eve nearly a century ago, when the fighting stopped on the battlefields of France during the First World War. Alan Johnston reports.
It is Christmas Eve, 1914, in the trenches in Flanders. There have been months of fighting and tens of thousands of men have been killed. But near the French town of Armentier, a calm has settled on the battlefront. It is a freezing, moonlit night. And in the silence, a young British soldier, Rifleman Graham Williams, is on sentry duty, peering out into no man's land. Many years later, he described what happened.
I was standing there on duty, gazing across, looking towards the German parapet. I thought, well, a very different Christmas this is going to be from any I've spent up till now. I thought about this time, at home we should have finished putting up all the greenery and holly and stuff. My father would be just finished making his rum punch, which he always did at Christmas. Anyway, I thought, I could just do with a swig of that rum punch now, and they're feeling pretty miserable altogether. Then all of a sudden, lights appeared all along the German trench. And I thought, well, that's a funny thing. And then the Germans started singing, Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht. And I woke up, but all the other sentries did the same thing. All woke up the other people to come along and see this, what on earth's going on. They finished their carol, we applauded them, and then we thought we must retaliate in some way, so we replied with the first Noel, and when we finished that they all began clapping, and then they struck up their another favourite carol of theirs, Old Tannenbaum. First the Germans singing one of their carols, then we sing another of ours. Until we started up, Come All Ye Faithful, and the Germans immediately joined in, singing the same thing to the Latin words of Adeste Fideles. And, well, I thought this was rather an extraordinary thing, really, to think of the two nations both singing the same carol in the middle of a war.
All along the front lines that night, the men of the two armies began to reach out to each other. A soldier with the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, Private Frank Richards, remembered how the men in his trench made contact with the help of a Christmas message that they'd written on a board.
We stuck a board up, Merry Christmas. They also stuck one up, Merry Christmas. So we were saying, well, I don't think they'll fire today. No, I don't think they will. Then lo and behold, here was a German coming down the river bank with his hands up above. One of our chaps threw his equipment off. He went out to meet him. Well, they shook hands. Then we all got out. Company commander come rushing in. He was going to shoot any man that went off. His voice from the next bay said he was too damn late. So we all had to get out. Well, we mucked in all day. Talking one thing and another. One of the Germans said to me, and in excellent English too, well, he said, I don't know, he said, how long do you think this damn war's going to last? I'm fed up to the neck. Oh, I said, you were not the only one fed up. I said, we'll have to our necks in water and mud. He said, we're the same. Of course, the officers had to get out then, and they sent for a couple of Germans back, and they brought some decanters, and the officers, you know, they had a damn good drink between them, see? And our company commander gave them a plum pudding, and they asked our company commander if he'd mind the company having two barrels of beer. He said, we've got plenty there in the brewery. He said, I can assure you, it won't make them drunk. So right all, it Two Germans wheeled two barrels out into the middle of no man's land. We rolled them back in the trench.
And there were scenes just like the one Private Richards described up and down the battlefront. Men who had been trying to kill one another for months emerged cautiously from behind their defences, shook hands, began to chat and share their rations and drink together. And on more than one patch of no man's land, there were games of football. One reported result has a familiar feel to it. Germany 3, England 2. But what really counted was that where there had been war, suddenly, almost unbelievably, there was peace and goodwill. Years later, a German major remembered his meeting with an English officer called Sir Edward Hulse. This is what he wrote.
As regards the Christmas armistice, the initiative was not taken by us, but by the Englishmen. On Christmas Day at about 11 o'clock, there was continuous waving of a white flag from the English trench, which was about 150 yards from ours. Soon afterwards, a number of them climbed out of the trench and came towards our front, making signs all the time. My commander, Major Baron von Blomberg, ordered me to find out what they wanted. Accompanied by an English-speaking volunteer, I went out to meet the Englishmen. Under the surprised gaze of the men in the trenches on both sides, the preliminary greetings exchanged were of a rather embarrassed nature. We heard that it was the wish of the Englishmen to bury, on the Christmas holiday, their dead, who were lying before the front, and they asked us to cease enemy action for an adequate period. What were we to do? Time was short. There was no time for making inquiries of the superior department. Major von Blomberg therefore decided that there should be a local armistice until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, telling the Englishmen that their dead must be buried by that time. While the English soldiers performed their sad task, I chatted with the then Lieutenant Sir Edward Hulse, and I handed him a Victoria Cross and letters which had belonged to an English captain who had fallen in our trench in the course of the attack of December the 18th. Touched by this respectful treatment of the belongings of one of his fallen comrades, Lieutenant Hulse took off his silk shawl and handed it to me as a memento of this Christmas Day. I felt so embarrassed by this gesture that I sent to the lieutenant on the same evening, from my Christmas gifts, a pair of fur gloves. Only on New Year's Day, when a single shot, fired from the English, killed a sentry, did this Christmas peace, which I shall never forget, come to an end.
Nowhere would the truce hold for more than a matter of days. The British and German generals had been astonished at the reports of camaraderie in no man's land. On both sides, they issued the sternest orders. There was to be no more fraternization with the enemy. Informal truces were to cease, and there were threats of court-martials. Gradually, all along the line, gunshots began to ring out again. Snipers started picking off their targets once more, and over time there was a return to all-out war. It would last for nearly 4 more years, and by the time the conflict ended, millions of soldiers had been killed. For many of those men who ventured out into no man's land during the truce, that Christmas in 1914 would be their last. Among them was the English officer who gave away his silk shawl as a gift and received the gloves in return. Sir Edward Hulse was killed in battle less than 3 months later.
Alan Johnston.
Christmas is not for myself, but for a world in need. No more lives torn apart than wars would never stop.
Fact and fiction, dramatized by the Coronet Storyteller. Today we are going back to a Christmas Eve in the 19th century. O. Henry's story of the true Christmas spirit, of love and sacrifice, the gift of the Magi, will be brought to you in just a moment by the Coronet Storyteller. $1.87. That was all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time.
Now, Della counted it for the third time.
$1.84, $1.85, $1.86, $1.87.
It was still the same. And the next day would be Christmas. $1.87 with which to buy a present for Jim. Her Jim. There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So Della did it. While Della's sniffles are gradually subsiding, take a look at the vestibule below, where you will see on the letterbox a card bearing the name Mr. James Dillingham Young. The Dillingham had been flung to the breeze during a former period of prosperity, when its possessor was being paid $30 per week. Now, when the income was shrunk to $20, the letters of Dillingham looked blurred, as though they were thinking seriously of contracting to a modest and unassuming D. But whenever Mr. James Dillingham Young came home and reached his flat above, he was called Jim and greatly hugged by Mrs. James Dillingham Young. That's Della. She has now finished her cry and is looking into the pier glass, attending to her cheeks with a powder rag. Suddenly, as she stands before the glass, she pulls down her hair and lets it fall to its full length. Now, there were two possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair, which now ripples about her, shining like a cascade of brown waters and reaching below her knee. Her eyes are brilliant, but her face has lost its color. Nervously and quickly, she does her hair up again, slips into her old brown jacket, puts on her old brown hat, and in the twinkling of an eye, she is halfway down the stairs and out on the street. Della has a determined, almost desperate look as she sights a sign reading Madame Sofroni, hair goods of all kinds. She stops quickly, then opens the door, which leads to a flight of stairs. Della rushes panting up the stairs and plumb into the portly figure of Madame Sofroni.
Will you buy my hair?
I buy hair? Take your hat off. That's of a sight of the looks of it.
Down ripples the brown cascade.
$20.
All right. Only quickly, please.
In a few moments, the implacable Madame Sofroni and her scissors have done the job. And Della, minus her hair, but richer by $20, flees from the store into the street again. This time, she's looking for a different store, a store in which to buy, not to sell. At last, she finds herself in a department store in the midst of a gay holiday throng. At the jewelry counter, as she longingly handles a platinum chain, she hesitantly asks,
"You did say $21, didn't you?" "Yes, that's what I thought."
This is it. This is the present just made for Jim and no one else. There's no other like it in any of the stores. She knows, but she turned all of them inside out. It's a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design. Della has made her mind up.
"I'll take it."
With the chain wrapped in a holiday box and clutched in her eager hand, Della finds herself again out on the street. But this time she is in such a rosy glow, she hardly notices the other last-minute shoppers hurrying by, the street trio playing Christmas carols, the old gentleman who tries to sell her a holly wreath. It seems but seconds until she is back in the little furnished flat again. There's a sudden shock as the pier glass confronts her, this time accusingly. Now comes the moment of reckoning as she gazes with dismay at the short ends of her hair. The rosy glow gives way to prudence and reason. Out comes the curling iron, on with the gas jet, as she sets to work repairing the ravages made by generosity and love. In 40 minutes, she finishes with the last curl lying tiny and close to her head, making her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. But to Della, gazing critically at herself in the pier glass, the result is anything but wonderful.
If Jim doesn't kill me first, You see, I look like a Coney Island chorus girl.
But no more time for reflections, physical or mental. It's nearly 7, and Jim is never late. She sits nervously waiting for Jim. Now she hears his steps on the stair way down on the first flight. She has a habit of saying silent little prayers about the simplest everyday things. And now she whispers,
"Please, God, make him not mind my hair so much. Make him think I'm still pretty."
The door opens, and Jim steps in and closes it. He has a smile of welcome on his face as he glances around the room for Della. But the smile freezes on his lips as he suddenly sees her sitting on the corner of the table. An expression comes into his eyes as immovable as a setter dog at the scent of quail. The expression terrifies Della, who is expecting anger, surprise, disapproval, or even horror. But not this look of... Della wriggles off the table and goes to him.
Jim, darling, don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold it because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let's be happy. And wait till you see the beautiful gift I got for you.
Della rattled on like that. But after she was all through, all Jim could ask laboriously was, "You've cut off your hair." Della tried again, this time more patiently.
Sold, I tell you. Sold and gone, too. And it went for you, Jim. Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered, but nobody could ever count my love for you. Now, shall we have supper?
At last, Jim seemed to wake out of his trance. He enfolded Della in his arm. And then he carefully draws a package from his overcoat pocket and throws it on the table. Nimble fingers quickly tear open the string and paper. And then...
Oh, Jim, they're beautiful. How did you know they're what I've always wanted? No. My hair. My hair. Oh, Jim, how can I wear them?
There they lay. The comb. The set Della had worshipped for so long in an exclusive shop window. Pure tortoiseshell with jeweled rims. Just the shade to wear in the beautiful and vanished hair. They were expensive combs, Della knew. And her heart had craved and yearned over them without the least hope of possession. And now Della hugs them to her and looks up at Jim with dim eyes and a smile.
My hair grows so fast, Jim.
Then Della puts the combs down carefully, lovingly. And even more radiantly prepares to show Jim his gift. She holds it out to him eagerly on outstretched palm. The dull, precious metal gleams and glows, entirely satisfied with its own value.
Isn't it a beauty, Jim? You'll have to look at the time every 15 minutes now. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks with the chain.
For answer, Jim sits down suddenly on the couch. Del, he says, let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. I sold the watch to get money to buy your combs. Now, how about supper? The Magi, as you know, were wise men who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts, these foolish ones were the wisest. They are the Magi.
Les Brown. and his band of renown. Yours truly, Bill Goodwin. Our special guest, Frank Sinatra. And here he is, Bob Hope.
Thank you very much, Bill Goodwin.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I decided to do my Christmas shopping earlier this year. Traffic downtown is murder. I know one guy who has a Hudson, and when he drives in town these days, he doesn't step down into it. He just shoves it in the gear and puts his head in the glove compartment. And what crowds. Everybody's shopping. Jack Benny was shopping, too. Jack had an awful dizzy spell. Dropped a dime in a revolving door, and it took him 5 minutes to find it. Jack Benny what he was buying. He said, not very much because he already has 100 gifts at home to distribute among his friends. His Christmas seals have arrived. And of course, I did my family shopping first, so I asked the clerk what I should get for my boys. She said, I'm sorry, I don't believe I know what boys want. You should have seen her. She didn't. Wouldn't have helped anyway. She didn't have it. But I did get a great box. I did get a great buy on perfume this year. I always give perfume. Last year it was Toujours Moi. The year before it was Toujours Toi. This year I got a lovely scent. It's called Toujours Smog. Don't laugh at these jokes. They may catch up. Ever get the feeling that you're in the wrong business? Now, they have some wonderful presents this year. The newest washing machine not only washes and rinses and dries the clothes, it waddles next door and borrows the soap powder. But this year, my family's getting gifts from my den that'll help me relax more. A contour chair, a dressing room gown, large can of Ovaltine. They're even changing the calendar on the wall to a hunting scene.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight is Frank Sinatra. But, folks, the story we're going to tell you really began this morning when Frank made a purchase in a Hollywood jewelry store.
These pearl cufflinks will be fine, I think. I'll take 12 pairs of them, huh?
Well, thank you, Mr. Sinatra. But do you think you'll need 12 pairs?
Yes, they're going to be Christmas presents for the crew on my picture. Very important boys, these fellas are, those grips and that guy behind the camera.
Really?
Yeah, you know it. Last Christmas, I slipped up and didn't send him anything, but never again.
Why? What did they do?
I don't know, but for the rest of the picture, I looked like I was walking around a Sydney Green Street skin.
Mr. Sinatra, where shall I send these?
Well, let me see. I just got back from the East and I haven't got settled yet. Tell you what, I'm going over to do the Bob Hope radio show. Why don't you send them over to Bob's house?
Right.
See you later, Maurice.
Goodbye, Mr. Sinatra. Oh, by the way, how did you like the signet ring you bought the last time you were here?
The signet ring? Oh, that worked out great.
It did?
Yeah, holds up my pants fine. So long.
Say, Bob.
Yeah, Bill.
This package just arrived for you.
Oh, fine.
And you know something? It's insured for $800.
You're kidding.
No. No, that's what it says. Gee, Bob, who'd send you a Christmas present that costs $800? You better unwrap it and find out who it's from.
Well, I can't. It says do not open till Christmas.
Well, yeah, but this could be somebody who needs medical attention right now.
Got an idea.
Yeah, Bob.
It says on the package it's from Maurice Jewelers. Call him and find out who sent this.
Okay. Now, why would Frank Sinatra send such an expensive gift? Oh, hey, Bob. That present was sent to you by...
Oh, don't tell me, Bill. Let me guess. Is it from somebody that has a slim, graceful figure and soft, wavy hair?
Well, yeah.
A person that everybody looks at walking down the street?
Yeah.
Someone whose voice is low and musical and gives everyone a thrill?
Oh, yeah.
And is it someone I'd like to take a trip through the tunnel of love with?
Well, you could, but it'd cause a lot of talk.
package is from Frank Sinatra.
Sinatra?
Can't be. That's what the man told me.
Well, Frank wouldn't send me a wonderful present like this.
Why not?
After all the things I've said about him? That he carries bricks in his pockets to keep from being blown away? And when he makes a picture, they use a string of spaghetti as a stand-in? That he's the only guy in town that can pull his shorts on from either end?
The gift is from Frank.
Gee, he's giving me an $800 present? What do I have him down on my list for?
Well, let's see. You were going to give him a $2 tie clip, and then you decided a 50-cent pen would be enough.
Well, if Frank has given me an $800 present, I'm certainly not going to kiss him off with any 50-cent pen. That wouldn't be right.
Oh, of course not, Bob.
Put him back in the list for the $2 tie clip.
Okay, Winthrop.
Down, Liberace's mother. Look at those teeth. I'm only kidding. I'll get Frank a nice gift. I'll get it.
Hi, Bob.
Frank! We were just talking about you. Come on in. Sit down, Frank.
Thanks. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Frank. Gee, Frank, it's a real thrill to have you drop in.
A thrill?
Yeah. Gee, you're looking great. You're looking swell. You know, Frank, you're just tops. Yes, sir, that's the way I feel about you.
Well, I didn't know. Should we pick out the ring?
What'll you be, the confetti?
Ooh.
Frank, I'm sincere about this. I'm proud to have you on the show, boy. You're the greatest performer, greatest personality, greatest singer, greatest talent.
Bob.
Yeah?
It's no use. You still got to pay me.
Don't get too many laughs. I can always finish this program with Eddie Fisher, you know.
You deserve it. I don't get this, Bob. What's all this big friendship kick all of a sudden?
Well, I'm happy, that's all.
Why?
Well, the way I'm being treated. Till this year, I didn't believe in Santa Claus.
You sound like a Republican.
You'll understand in a minute. Pardon me while I go in the other room and get a certain package.
All right.
Say, when did you get back from the East, Frank?
Just arrived, Bill. I wanted to be here for the holiday.
Oh, naturally.
How about you, Will? Is the jolly old gent with the big tummy going to be good to you this year?
Oh, sure, Frank. Bob always gives me something.
By the way,
yeah.
What goes on with Robert? He's treating me so great, you think I just shot Red Skelton or one of those other guys.
Now, Bob likes you, Frank. As a matter of fact, he's going to spend a chunk of dough on your Christmas present. $400 or $500. Old Happy Hips likes you.
Gee, that's touching. You know, my eyes are getting misty.
Yeah?
And to think I've been giving him such a brush.
Shh, here he comes, Frank.
My boy, you're looking great. You know something? I'd never believe that you're as old as you are.
You don't know how old I am.
It doesn't matter. I'd never believe it. Now, look, I'm leveling with you. Till tonight, I never realized how young and how handsome you are.
Well, Frank, if Bob's so young and handsome, how come there are all those lines in his face?
Those are not lines, Bill.
That's right. It's just that I have so much good looks, I have to pleat my face to get it all in. You don't have to flatter me. I know how much you like me. Not many people send me $800 Christmas presents.
What? Do you really think you'll see the day when I'll give you an $800 Christmas present?
Oh, I think so.
You better start taking vitamins, kid. You got a long time to live.
Well, why deny it, Frank? Here's the package right here.
Let me see that. Oh, Bob, this isn't for you. This contains the presents for the crew on my picture. I just had Marie send them over here.
Oh.
Just a minute, Dad. You weren't being so nice to me just because you thought I was going to give you an expensive present, were you?
Heck, no, I was sure of it.
But you still mean what you said, don't you? I mean about my being such a nice-looking guy and all that jazz and...
Of course, Frank. You're fine. You look great. You're in great shape. That is for a human hat rack.
Well, Bob, I meant what I said, too. You do look young.
As young as any of those guys. Jack Benny, George Jessel.
You know something, Frank?
What's that, Bob?
It's great to be back to normal again.
Sure is.
Say, Frank.
Yes, Robert.
Do you recall a little experience we shared years ago during the holiday season?
If you are referring to the outstanding fiasco of my career, I certainly do remember it, old man.
Pretty grim, wasn't it?
It should have happened to Como.
Would you mind if we tell the folks about it now that the audience is dying of curiosity?
Oh, is that what they're dying of?
One of these days.
Yeah. Down, Maggio. He's your dog. He looks like eternity got here before he did. Well, anyway.
Here we go, folks. A Yuletide incident in the lives of Sinatra and Hope.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you back 17 years. It is 1936, the last year of the Big Depression, and everyone is struggling to get along. A certain young man is trying to get a job in a Cleveland department store.
Well, young fellow, what can I do for you?
Oh, your ad in the paper says you want extra clerks for the Christmas rush. I thought you'd give me a job because I'm a Cleveland boy, and you know my family. You knew my father before me and his father before him.
All right, Hope, I'll hire you on one condition.
What's that?
Like you say, I know your family. Stay away from the cash register.
Yes, sir.
You can start tomorrow morning in the haberdashery department.
Thank you, sir. And Dad'll be happy when he hears about it, too. I'll tell him next visiting day.
I want a present for my husband. Are you the clerk in charge of this counter?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, tell me, do you have nice, warm, woolen socks that go almost up to the knees?
No, I don't.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I really don't need them. I have very hairy legs.
Idea. I've a good mind to tell the manager about this.
He already knows that we dress in the same locker room. We're on the bowling team. Say, you want to watch out for me. I'm going to be a vaudeville comedian, and I got a lot of fast lines.
Well, never mind the socks. I think I'll buy myself a pair of slippers.
Right over here, ma'am. We have a complete line. Carpet slippers, bedroom slippers, moccasins, galoshes, and hip boots. The hip boots are wonderful to slip on when you're going to feed the pigs.
Do I look as though I have a herd of pigs to feed?
I don't know. How big is your family?
Why, you impertinent young whippersnapper, floorwalker!
Yes, what's the trouble, lady?
This clerk insulted me. He said my family are pigs.
Well, if it ain't Nellie the shoplifter. Beat it, honey. Go on down to the silverware section and put the snatch in some of the sterling.
I'll go. But you tell Beagle Beak here, be more polite to us shoplifters. We got a union, you know.
Thanks for getting me out of that jam. Are you a new floor walker?
The dew is still wet on my carnation. I haven't even got my striped pants yet.
What are those you're wearing?
I drew some ink lines in my long underwear. Well, it's a little embarrassing, you know, when I go up to the front of the store.
Yeah, and it must be your bargain basement. Well, I better get back to work.
Not so fast. I got a bone to pick with you.
Who is it, you? What's wrong?
Now, look, while you're working on my section, Sonny, no more calling the customers pigs, you understand?
I was just making a joke. You see, I'm trying to get in the show business.
No, well, shake, Buster.
You mean you want to get in show business, too?
Yeah, I want to sing. I eat singing, sleep singing, think singing. I want to be a singer in the worst way.
Maybe Bing will give you lessons.
I got to do one of the numbers on the store loudspeaker. I wait.
Yeah, all right.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Customers, this is Singing Frankie again. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Go up to the second floor. There's a girdle sale today.
Hey, let me help you sell those girdles, will you?
Back it right in here.
Oh, pick your size, pay no cash, put it on your tab. Have a happy holiday while we hold in your flag.
Hey, you know
Hello, Sutton, Carl.
You know, we're not too bad.
Yeah, if you were prettier, we could do the paper-made pen song. Hey, Frank, tonight's Christmas Eve. What do you say? After work, we live it up a little.
Live it up?
Yeah, I got us a date with a couple of creeps. How about it? You want to waltz the light with a couple of fantastics?
You mean you got us a date with two dames?
Well, reasonably accurate facsimiles. They work in the furniture department, and their upholstery's kind of loose. Well, come on. I told the girls to wait for us in the restaurant in the corner. Let's go.
I'm going.
Say Esperanza. What is it, Calvina? Oh, those boys ought to be here by now. What department of the store did you say they work in?
The haberdashery department. Why?
Oh, I'm just getting nervous, that's all. Once I had a blind date with a fellow from the floor covering section. And when he saw what I looked like, he wrapped me in a tube of linoleum.
These fellas won't be like that.
What sort of guys are they?
Well, they'll think we're pretty.
Oh, stoops. Hey, here comes one fellow in the door now.
There's two fellas.
Oh, yeah. For a
minute, it looked like one fellow with a toothpick.
Well, here we are.
Oh, hello,
hello, boys.
Hello, girls. You mean, these are them?
This is it.
You said we had a date with a couple of chicks.
So?
Chicks, not buzzards.
Take it easy, Frank. They may not look like much, but they grow on you.
They do, huh?
Yeah, I've only known them 5 minutes, and already I'm sick.
Sit down, boys.
Okay.
Oh, you sit right here beside me, honey. You're cute.
Thanks, Grandma.
Now, I'm not so old. I'm just pressing 30.
You're pressing 30? In what, your memory book?
It's Christmas Eve. Why don't we make a party out of this? Let's live it up a little.
Oh, wonderful.
Although, in your case, it may be a little late.
You guys are pretty snooty for store clerks.
Oh, we're not just store clerks.
Heavens, no.
We're in show business. We're going to be big stars. We're going to live on Fifth Avenue in the best penthouse.
You bet.
The Waldorf Astoria in a beautiful suite, and in Beverly Hills in a ritzy mansion.
Where are you staying now?
In an alley under a loose manhole cover.
Well, look, if you're such big wheels, let's have some food. Say, waiter, we'll have filet mignons, mushroom, and pheasant on the glass.
Oh, no.
And
no.
Lobster thermidor, caviar, and champagne.
Oh, bye. Ouch. Oops.
What are you groaning about? You said you were big wheels.
Yeah, but we're a little short of axle grease. Well, we've all had a fine dinner. I wonder how much the bill is.
$46.60. And you better have the dough to pay for it.
Listen, Herm, you're talking to a couple of guys that are going to be famous someday. Just leave the tab, my good man, and we'll pay you the next time we're passing through on our way to Hollywood.
Yeah, we'll be shuttling back and forth all the time between Lana and Tallulah.
You're working out right now, waiting on tables.
Us? Waiters? Why, my friend here is going to be a great singer.
Then you can be singing waiters. Yeah. Now, do you start working, or do I call a cop and clap you both in jail?
Well, what do you say, pal?
Jingle bells, try our stakes today. Just $1.98, that's not too much to pay. T-bone round porterhouse, we've got them by the dozen. They are really famous for they once were Trigger's cousins. Good evening, friends.
thanks for the memory. I want to thank Frank Sinatra for coming on doing a fine show tonight.
Thank you.
Candy canes on the tree. Santa's on his way. He's filled his sleigh with things, things for you and for me. It's that time of year when the world falls in love. Every song you hear seems to say, Merry Christmas, may your New Year dreams come true. And this song of mine in three-quarter time wishes you and yours the same.
Well, I don't normally talk at this point, but I just want to send out Christmas wishes, blessings, and hugs to Bottom Line Fighter, who dropped into the chat room. He used to come to my shows stationed in Afghanistan. He only had 3 minutes or 5 minutes or something on the phone, and he would spend them listening to my show, and I always sent out blessings and hugs and love to all of our men and women that aren't with us, that are not here in the United States. And I'm touched and honored that he dropped in again. And I'm sending all of you big hugs, many prayers, and lots of love. And hope you come home soon. Okay, I have one more little skit, little play for you tonight from Duffy's Tavern. This is an old show that started in 1941. In 42, it was on CBS and NBC Blue Network. And then 42 to 44, NBC, 44 to 51, also, and concluding on December 28, 1951. It's featured celebrity guests, and it was based around Archie, a bartender, and he was portrayed by Ed Gardner, who was also the writer and co-created the series. Anyhow, without further ado, I'm going to present Duffy's Tavern. And this is, you know, a Christmas thing, of course, because that's our theme. I'm sorry, I don't seem to have my voice here tonight. And then tomorrow night, I will end this show right after this. It's a pretty short one, about 20 minutes. And tomorrow night, I will be back, remember, an hour earlier, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 Eastern, with the very rare and touching, sentimental, tearjerker read by author Truman Capote of his own A Christmas Memory, and that's about 60-year-old reading, and it's just wonderful and very, very tear-jerking and touching. It's a tradition every year. Also, other shows and music, other stories will probably either do The Wizard of Oz with Judy Garland or The Miracle on 34th Street, also with the original cast, or perhaps Pinocchio. I haven't decided, but please come back. It's going to be a good show. So I'll end with Duffy's Tavern, 1941, and say good night and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern. Why do you late me? See, don't you mind just making Duffy ain't here? Hello, Duffy. Huh? Look, please don't give me that Merry Christmas stuff. I sound like I got up on the wrong side of the floor this morning. Look, Duffy, I had one eggnog. Just happened that I hit some bad nutmeg. Well, if you want to know, I'm a little sore about your gratuity for Christmas. That lousy Christmas card. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. P.S. After you read this, get back to work. Fine sentiment this time of the year. Well, after 9 years, I thought maybe I might get some little present. Some little luxury. Some little thing I wouldn't think of getting for myself. Like money. Huh? Look, Duffy. Someday, you're going to leave this vale of tears. You're going to leave it with your pockets bulging with bills, but I'm warning you. Where you're going, you're going to find that paper money ain't going to last long. I leave you with that thought for today. Christmas. 7 days a week. 18 hours a day. I work my grindstone to the nose. What do I get? Nothing but gratitude. And very little of that.
Merry Christmas, Miss Austin.
What's so merry about it, Eddie? Starvation wages, no dough to buy nothing.
Oh, you got a little dough.
Yeah, but how far will it take me with the present prices of economics? The landlady sends me a notice. From the first of the year on, your apartment will be $9 a month. $9 for four lousy rooms.
Does that include bath?
Who knows? Never get to see the place the way I have to work around here, but does Duffy care?
Well, don't let it get you, Miss Arthur. You see, this is the time of the year to forget your trouble.
Yeah.
Christmas is a time when you should be thinking about helping other people out.
Helping other people out, huh? When Gorilla Hogan got drunk and nasty here last night and started picking on me, did you help me out?
I couldn't. See, I was back in the kitchen cooking.
What takes a half an hour to cook?
With Gorilla Hogan drunk and nasty, a couple of three-minute eggs.
That's what I'm talking about. When I'm in a fight and I need help, you disappear.
Yeah, but you always bragging about what a wonderful fighter you are.
You certainly picked the funniest times to start believing me. You give me that Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, boys.
Merry Christmas, mister.
Archie, I said Merry Christmas.
Are you kidding? What have I got to be merry about working for that cheapskate old man of yours?
Archie, you just don't know Papa. He really isn't cheap.
No, that's right. Once, in an outburst of generosity, he gave away his toenail clippings. What about the time he took your old lady on her honeymoon? Where did they go?
Niagara Falls.
That's what he told everybody, Niagara Falls. But what he really did, they stayed home and your old man let the water run in the bathtub while he showed your mother a box of shredded wheat. Tell me how cheap the guy is. Just a minute. Hello? Oh, just a second. It's your girlfriend, Vera Fogarty.
Oh, thanks. Hello, Vera. How did you do with Santa Claus? Okay, but no presents, huh?
have everything, Vera. What's on your mind? A dance? Where? At the Y? M or W? The YW, huh? Well, okay, Vera, I'll go. But this time you've got to lead. All right. Okay, I'll meet you at Schimmelbacher's. Well, so long, everybody. I got a heavy date. What are you going to do tonight, Archie?
Me? I think I'll just spend a quiet evening standing around disappointing pickpockets.
Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Sure, thanks, Archie. Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, hello, Finnegan.
Aren't you going to wish me a Merry Christmas?
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Did you hang up your stocking?
Oh, no, Arch. I hung up my stocking last year, and it was a bum idea.
A bum idea?
Yeah, the blood kept rushing to me head.
Finnegan, what I meant was, did you get any presents for Christmas?
No, different things, Arch. My mother gave me some building blocks. Monogrammed, of course. And my sister gave me a bottle of bubble bath.
Bubble bath?
Yeah, and is that stuff a fake?
What do you mean a fake?
I sat in a tub and took four drinks of it, and I couldn't even blow a single bubble. Well, I just dropped in to say hello. I gotta run along, Art.
You gotta run along? Where you going?
I'm going over to sing Christmas carols.
Oh, yeah? Where?
At Water McGuitch. You going over, Art?
No, I'm not.
How come?
Didn't invite me.
Oh. Well, I'll be seeing you, Art.
Finnegan, you mean you ain't going to spend Christmas with me, really, like you usually do?
Well, Art, I thought you was going to McGuitch, too, so I accepted. You ain't sure, are you?
No. Why should I be sore? Go ahead. Have a good time.
Well, Merry Christmas, Arch.
Merry Christmas, Clifton. Fine Christmas. No bonus. Your friends walk out on you. The next guy that says Merry Christmas to me, I'm going to punch him right in the nose. Ah, what's the use? Eddie.
Yes?
Eddie, turn on the radio, will you? Maybe it'll snap me out of this mood.
Okay.
Eddie, that's Christmas music. Take it off, will you? Give me something with some pep in it.
Okay, I'll try another station.
Eddie, please, I asked you, didn't I?
Well, Miss, I don't think there's anything on the radio but Christmas music.
Well, keep pushing them buttons. There must be something else on the air. Eddie, what are you trying to do, drive me nuts?
Look bad. I'm running out of buttons.
Okay, forget about it. Well, I think we better lock up the place. It's getting late.
Okay. I'll go clean up the kitchen.
All right, do that. This Christmas music. I ain't got enough trouble at this time of the year. They got to put on music that makes them even sadder.
Hello there, Archie.
Huh? Hey, how did you get in here?
Walked in.
That's funny. I thought I just locked the door. We was closing up.
Oh, and maybe I better leave.
Listen, you said Archie. How did you know my name?
Well, I've heard about you.
Oh, well, I'm pretty well known around here. Will you have a little drink, bud?
No, I don't think so.
Go ahead, it's on the house.
On the house?
Sure, it's Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, huh?
Well, anyway, it's a day in December. What'll you have?
Well, maybe I'll take a glass of water.
Water? You kidding? Here, mister, we got some pretty good wine here. At least have a glass of wine, huh? Look, I never seen you around here before. How did you happen to come in here to the tavern?
Oh, I was just walking around, saw the lights, thought I'd drop in. You don't think much of Christmas, do you, Archie?
Oh, you got me wrong. I love it. I wouldn't be without it. Good old Christmas. Time of the year when after you work for a guy for 9 years and knock your brains out, he says to you, Merry Christmas, Archie. The time when even your closest friend walks out on you.
Well, maybe there's another side to Christmas.
Oh, yeah? Like what?
Well, like Like the look on a kid's face when he sees what Santa Claus has left in his stocking.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the feeling in a man's heart when his family's around him on Christmas Eve. You see, Christmas isn't a thing you can reach out and touch, Archie. It's a thing inside us.
Look, bud, I can see you've been running around with a different class of people. Around this neighborhood, every guy is out for himself.
Oh, I don't know. I think this neighborhood and the people are pretty much the same as most others.
Oh, I know he's a stranger.
Well, I could be wrong. Why don't you and I take a little walk?
You mean you want to see for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little fresh air will do you good, Archie.
Fresh air? Are you inferring this joint as an incinerator?
Well, no.
Well, it is. Come on, let's go. Hey, Eddie, keep an eye on the joint, will you? Listen to that, will you? Not only don't you only get it over the radio, you can't even walk along a public street with that belting it at you.
I kind of like it.
You like it? Well, everybody to his own poison. Did you ever listen to the words of that tune?
Did you?
I should have had to listen to them all day. All is calm, all is bright. How do you like that? The world is a mess. Everybody has his hand in the other guy's pocket, but don't make no difference to the guy that wrote that song. To him, all is bright.
Well, maybe the guy that wrote that song was thinking about something in men's hearts. Something that shines a little brighter on a day like this. Didn't you ever sing Christmas carols, Archie?
Oh, yeah. Christmas carols, sure. When I was a punk kid and I didn't know no better. But you have to grow up someday.
Now, that's the trouble with a lot of us. Maybe we're not growing up. Maybe we're just losing track of things that matter.
Like what?
Oh, things like faith, tolerance, human kindness.
That's nice. And where does one find them things?
You don't find them, Archie. You give them. And it's a funny thing. The more you give, the more you have. Say, why don't we drop in over there?
Huh?
Across the street.
Across the street? That's a church.
Yeah, I know. Why don't we drop in for a second?
Into a church?
Why not?
But I wouldn't know how to act.
You, don't go to church, huh?
Well, no, I'm not rapping it, you know. It's just that there's two types of guys when it comes to going to church. There's them that does and them that don't. I happen to be the type that don't.
Well, now, why don't you just drop in with me for a second?
Well, I guess if I go with somebody else, it won't count against me. Funny thing, though, you know, to take a look at you, I wouldn't figure that you was the religious type.
No?
No, but that's what I say. You never can tell about people. Okay, leave us go in. It's a pretty tough world.
But it'd be tougher if they didn't have a place like this to come to. Didn't you ever pray, Archie?
Well, sure, when I was a kid. What was that prayer again? They learned us, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy did it. Well, you know the thing I mean. But, look, please, leave us get out of here and begin to get the heebie-jeebies.
All right.
Just a second, bud.
What are you doing?
Well, the sign says help the poor, don't it?
I thought you believed in everybody helping themselves.
Well, I do, but tonight maybe I'm a little superstitious.
Or maybe it's just because it's Christmas.
Look, mister, please, don't start with that peace on earth stuff, will you? I told you I'd take you around, show you the neighborhood and what it's really like now. Please, let's keep it that way. Just a minute, I want to pick up a paper.
Paper?
Yeah, that cripple kid there. Nice kid, Jimmy Turner.
Cripple, huh?
Yeah, he ain't walked in years, but he's always got a smile for everybody, and I like to help him out once in a while.
Paper, read all about it. Get your paper.
Hiya, Jimmy.
Hello, Archie. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, kid.
Well, Jimmy, it's a little tough not being able to walk, isn't it?
I ain't kicking. I can yell. That's all I need for this racket.
What'd you get for Christmas, Jimmy?
Nothing much. But it's okay. I got my Christmas present last summer.
Last summer?
Yeah. One of my customers took me up to the Yankee Stadium to see the Yanks play.
You like the Yanks, Jimmy?
Like them. Do you ever see that DiMaggio play ball?
Oh, give me a favor, son.
Okay, mister. Here you are. Latest edition.
Thanks, kid. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, mister.
You were talking about Joe DiMaggio, Jimmy.
Oh, boy, what a ball player. That DiMaggio's the greatest outfielder in the world. And the way that guy can pull him.
Jimmy, do you know who that was who bought the paper just now?
Who?
That was Joe DiMaggio.
You're kidding.
No, no, look at him. He just stopped there by that streetlight.
Joe DiMaggio? You mean Joe bought a paper from me and I didn't even recognize him?
Wait a minute. Maybe I can get him to come back. Hey, DiMaggio. Hey, DiMaggio. Hey, you.
You calling me?
Yes. You know, you've got quite an admirer in that crippled newsboy over there.
Me?
Yeah. Now, look. You're Joe DiMaggio. And if that kid could shake hands with you, it'd be the best Christmas present he ever got. Would you do it?
Of course I will. Be glad to. Come on, let's go over to him.
No, just a minute. Let him walk over to you.
But, mister, I told you the kid can't walk.
Well, let's find out, Archie. Oh, Jimmy, Joe DiMaggio wants to shake hands with you.
Yeah, come on, Jimmy. Come on over and shake hands.
But, gee, Joe, don't you see? I can't.
Come on, Jimmy.
Joe, I'm walking. Mash, you see what I'm doing to Mash? I'm walking.
I can't understand it. Positively incredible.
What's the matter?
That kid back there. I seen him sitting on that corner like that for the past 6 years, and tonight the kid is walking.
Maybe he could have walked all the time.
No. No, he couldn't. You did it. You did it by telling him that was Joe DiMaggio.
It was.
Now, look, you can fool a kid, but don't try to fool me. It couldn't have been DiMaggio.
No?
Certainly not. I just read in the papers this morning DiMaggio was spending Christmas with his family in San Francisco. Hey, look, this thing is getting a little weird.
Nice town, San Francisco.
Huh? Oh. Well, I've never been that far west. San Francisco, your hometown?
No, no.
Where are you from?
I'm from the east.
The east? What town?
A small town called Bethlehem.
Bethlehem, huh? Hey, you know anybody in Allentown?
I might.
A guy by the name of Luke Grant?
Lou Grant. Does he run a bar and grill on Front Street?
Yeah, that's the guy. Well, you sure get around, don't you? What are you, one of them traveling salesmen or something?
Well, I guess you might call me that. Well, say, what's the excitement? What's the crowd doing in front of that hotel?
Where? Oh, yeah. Hey, lady, what's going on here?
That man up there on the ledge.
Where?
Up there on the window ledge of the hotel. He says he's going to jump at midnight.
Why?
I don't know. I guess he's crazy. He says he never wants to see another Christmas.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you can hardly blame the guy. Now, wait. There goes the chimes. Must be 11:45. Let me check my watch here. Yeah, the guy's got exactly 15 minutes before he jumps. Let's stick around.
Are you sure of the time?
Well, certainly. I always set me watch by them chimes.
Well, how long has he been up there?
4 hours. The police have been trying to find his wife.
His wife?
Yes. They think maybe if they found her, she could talk him out of it.
Come on, Archie.
Where are you going?
I'd like to talk to that fellow.
Are you crazy? They ain't gonna let you in that hotel. Look at the cops guard in the doorway. Besides, you can't do nothing with a guy like that. He's nuts.
I'd like to talk to him anyway.
Okay, have it your way. We'll tell the cops we live in a hotel, but I better go along with you.
Hey, wait a minute, you. Where do you think you're going?
We live here. Me and me friend here was just going up to our suite.
You and what friend?
That guy there. That guy that just walked in.
Nobody walked in this hotel, bud. And nobody's going to walk in.
Okay, so nobody walked in. What am I going to do, argue with you? I'm telling you, I just come in with the guy.
Look, son. Why don't you go home and sleep it off?
Yeah.
Listen, you. Don't come near or try to grab me.
If you do, I'll jump.
I'm not going to grab you. I just came to talk to you, to see if maybe I could change your mind.
It's too late to change my mind. As soon as those chimes ring, I'm jumping. I'm not afraid to die.
Maybe you're afraid to live. A lot of people are.
What have I got to live for?
What have any of us got to live for? Look at those people down there on the street, hundreds of them, waiting for a ray of hope, a sign of courage in this frightened world. What you're doing might extinguish the last spark of faith in many of their tired hearts.
Their tired hearts. At least their wives are with them at Christmas. Come on, chimes, ring. Ring. Let's get it over with.
Your wife means a lot to you, doesn't she?
If she didn't, do you think I'd be up here? I haven't had one peaceful moment since she left me.
Why did she leave you?
Because I was a fool. But it's too late to think of that. Oh, why don't those chimes ring out and get it over with? What's slowing them up?
Nothing's slowing them up. It's just that in these last moments, the seconds seem like years.
Paul! Paul!
Anne!
Yes, darling, it's me.
Oh, Anne.
Paul.
Thank God. Thank God you've come back.
My darling.
Those chimes. I was going to jump when I heard
them. Yes, I know. I know. I was afraid I was too late. Thank God I got here in time.
Hello, Archie. Glad I found you again.
Hey, it's you. How did you do it, mister? How'd you stop that guy from jumping?
Just talked to him till his wife came. She just got there in time.
Yeah. Funny how she just got there in time, wasn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, it happens I was looking at my watch, timing it out to see when the guy was going to jump.
So?
Them chimes rang 4 minutes late.
Maybe your watch is slow.
Oh, no, it ain't. Remember, I checked it with the chimes a little while ago, and them bells has never been wrong. Look, come on. Leave us get out of here. I'm getting back to the tavern. This is a little too screwy for me.
Okay, we'll take a cab. There's an empty one.
Where to, fellas?
We want to go to Duffy's Tavern, quick.
Okay. How about a little music?
Wait a minute. There it is. Driver, please. Take that thing off of there, will you? Get something else.
Okay.
Oh, what's the use? Leave it on there. Look, mister.
Yeah?
You know something? You stay pretty calm considering all the crazy things that have been happening tonight. It's a little weird. First the newsboy. Then the guy on the window ledge.
Well, we all have our troubles, Archie. We all get off the track once in a while. We just need something bigger than ourselves to steer us straight.
You mean something like religion?
Call it that. Call it human kindness. Tolerance. Understanding.
Begin to see what you mean. Hey, driver, watch out for that guy. Look, don't worry, taxi. It wasn't your fault. The guy walked right out in front of you.
Yeah. Did you see him, mister? He walked right out in front of me.
Well, let's see how badly he's hurt.
Hey, we better call a cop.
Hey, here comes a cop now.
All right. Stand back. Give the poor devil a chance. Now, what happened here?
Well, the guy walked right out in front of the cab.
Yeah, the driver's right, officer. It wasn't a taxi's fault. We was riding along, and all of a sudden, this guy stepped right out in front of the cab, like he was blind.
Hey, wait a minute. He is a blind man. There's his cane there.
Here, maybe I can help him.
Wait a minute, you take your hands off him. It's against the law. Wait till the ambulance gets here.
Against the law to help someone?
You heard me. You never know when you're doing them more harm than good.
All right, officer, just as you say.
Hey, wait a minute. Look. The guy is getting up.
What's going on? What hit me? The crowd. The noise. I was all confused. Tell me, what? Oh, wait. Wait a minute. Lights. And faces. I can see. I can see.
Easy now, mister. You'd better not try to get up.
I'm all right, I tell you. And I can see. For the first time since Okinawa, I can see.
I didn't mean to hit you, bud.
You didn't mean to hit him. You done him a favor. The guy says he can see.
Hey, the shock must have given back his sight.
No. No, it wasn't that. Someone touched me. I felt a cool hand. And the minute he touched me, I was all right. Where is he? Where is he?
Come on, Archie, let's go. We've done all we can.
Well, it certainly is good to be back in the tavern again. I think we better have a little drink, though. You want to finish your wine, Bud?
No, thanks.
You know something? I'm all mixed up.
Mixed up?
Yeah, about this Christmas stuff.
Well, you see, Archie, as I said, Christmas isn't just a date on a calendar. Or a wreath in a window or a song. It's something in men's hearts. And they can let it die or keep it in their hearts the year round.
365 days of Christmas. You know, it's a funny thing. If you'd said that to me a little while ago, I'd have laughed in your face, but now I don't know. I don't know. Wait a second. I'd like to turn on the radio a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, that's a good one. Wonder what happened to that silent night. That same tune and it drove me nuts. Now all of a sudden I got a feeling I'd kind of like to hear it again.
Miss Archer. Miss Archer. Mr. Archer.
Huh? What is it, Eddie?
I finally got you some dance music on the radio.
Eddie, I don't want no dance music. Turn it off, will you?
I wish you'd make up your mind.
Look, mister. Until you walked in here today, Hey, Eddie. Eddie, what happened to that guy I was talking to?
Well, nobody talking to you.
You're nuts. He was standing here at the bar. He came in with me.
Miss Archer, please, there's nobody here.
No? Maybe it was all... Eddie, you sure that there was nobody here?
No. Must have been seeing things.
Maybe you're right. Wait a minute. This glass of wine here. The glass is half empty.
Huh?
Nothing, Eddie, nothing. Just leave me alone for a little while, will you?
Okay. Good night, Miss Archer.
Good night, Eddie. Eddie?
Yeah?
Merry Christmas.
Oh, thanks, Miss Archer. Merry Christmas to you, sir. Good night.
Night. Christmas. Our Father. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven.
This special broadcast of Duffy's Tavern has been brought to you with every good wish for a very merry, a very happy Christmas.
How still we see thee lie above thy deep and dreamless sleep. The silent stars go by, yet in thy dark speech shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. life is born of Mary and gathered all above. While mortals sleep, the angels keep their watch of wondering love. O morning stars, together proclaim the holy birth, and praises sing to God our King, and peace to men on earth.
Good night, everybody. See you tomorrow, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 Eastern. Thanks for listening.